enough to do today. Today you'll see if you have any. We were talking before about at the end of Rabbi Bednash's class about Litvish, Chassidish. If you're a Litvisha, it's an insoluble problem. If it's a Chassidish, you can solve it. Are you cold? You look like you're, because I have the heat on at 24. Okay, I think it's okay. Okay, today is Sunday, February 3rd, 2013, and I look at the calendar and I get frightened. The year is running away. Next week we have Shir, 2 weeks we have Shir, and then it's Purim, and then you have about 2 weeks left, and it's the Pesach break with all that that implies. So life moves on as you learn when you grow older. Anyway, I just want to comment. I've gotten endless. First of all, everyone is talking about Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, who's now the Mashgiach at the YU. He happens to be my student. But do all of you know Rabbi Weinberger? He's an interesting individual who has become a semi-Hasidic Rebbe. I'll use that word. Those of you from the Five Towns know what I'm talking about. And his shul, Eish Kodesh, is a tremendous success story. Which had you, does anyone here daven in Young Yisrael of Woodmere? It influenced Young Yisrael of Woodmere because it was a breakaway because of the talking. And I davened in Young Yisrael of Woodmere many times. And the talking was unbelievable. And here Eish Kodesh comes along and there's no talking and there's singing. And it's a real beautiful Hasidish American 21st century davening. And he now is becoming Mashgiach in YU. So there's a website. Correct me if I'm not. It's not. It's a website, I trust. I'm using the right term. If not, correct me. Hirschel Sig's blog. And it's an interesting website. It's pro Chabad. With all the websites anti Chabad, this one is pro Chabad. So I have a very interesting article here on his appointment and what it'll do for YU. And I think the bottom line is very simple. You're not going to change YU into a Hasidic shtibel. But certainly for those who need the Varamkeit and what Hasidus has and the Svarim and the understanding of life and the philosophy and the theology, it certainly will be helpful for those young men. And I give my Talmud Moshe Weinberg all the credit and wish him bracha v'hatzlacha b'chol asher tifneh. Now, a student who listens, Dov Reifer from Muncie, who I greatly appreciate, so he wrote to me that we keep on mentioning the Mishnah Brura, that there's a Sefer Piskei Tshuvot, which is an elaboration of sources that the Mishnah Brura recalls and goes beyond. And he gave me a link to a critique of the Piskei Tshuva, a Piskei Tshuva, and another link to one defending. And I looked at it and I found it very, very interesting. And I just want to comment for 1 second. First of all, we have the Sferim in our library downstairs. Secondly, I personally, it's beyond the Mishnah Brura. It's not that you needed to study Mishnah Brura. It's Lahagdol Torah Lahadira. It goes into more sources and sources that the Mishnah Brura didn't have 100 years ago or 110 years ago when he wrote the Mishnah Brura. But what's interesting is the critique. And the critique is very simple because the author of the Piskei Tshuva is coming evidently from the world of Simcha Rabinovitz. And I see he has Haskama, if I'm not mistaken, I saw Haskama from the Abbasin of the Eder Haredit. So he's coming from the Eder Haredit, a totally different world. And for instance, the way he presents the whole question of wearing a kippah. In the book that came out now, Benativ Hadmama, so there's a whole description of Aaron Rakefet not wearing a kippah. You can read it and see and you judge accordingly, but it was maskin shachat for me how I, let's put it this way, outfoxed the KGB in 1985. And of course, there I am without a kippah standing with English tourists. Can you go without a kippah? What is the halacha with a kippah? No. The way we understand it, and I think this is the way I would write about it, that a kippah is today perhaps the most important element in identifying a male Orthodox Jew. But halachically, a kippah really originally was not required at all. The Medrash, there's a Medrash rabbi, don't require you to cover your heads the way the goyim do when they go into their idol worship. So we all know that in the Gemara there were a few Hasidim, Anshei Maisa, who wore a kippah. And again, I don't want to waste time now, but you all know by the times of the Ashkenazic Rishonim and the Mashal, and afterwards the Ramah, we try not to go Dalet Amot without a kippah. Nevertheless, we know that the Sephardic Jews, and in Germany, the Torum Derech Eretz Jews, did not wear a kippah when they were in a house, when their heads were covered, only when they learned or made a bracha, etc. And you all know their famous pictures of Rav Hirsch without a kippah. There's a picture of Mori Rebbe, Rav Salman Mori Rebbe in Berlin without a kippah. It's a University of Berlin picture, I believe. And one of his, not direct descendants, but a great nephew, published a picture and put a big kippah on the head. But from the point of view of the author of Piskei Tshuva, he describes a kippah with such chumras that I understand already the criticism. And I can give you many more examples. He talks about a woman not covering her hair. So I don't have to tell you, to a Litvish approach, following the Aruch HaShulchan, Reb Moshe Feinstein, we have a more benevolent approach than he does. Washing negel vaser in the morning, how many of us leave a bowl next to our bed? There's a rashba, there's a tshuva, we have bathrooms, we dalet amud is outside the house, not in the house. Baruch Hashem, it's not like I was in Moshava camp in 1953 or 53, I believe, yeah? And there we slept in tents, and we all left negel vaser next to our bed, because in order to go get negel vaser, you had to walk, an endless little walk. So I need not tell you, the criticism is correct when you view the book as coming from that type of understanding of life. Okay, so I thank Dov Reifer for bringing it to my attention. I found it fascinating, but you have to know who the author is. The Chafetz Chaim was the Chafetz Chaim, and I needn't go further when there was a big turmoil here against women wearing a shetel, so Rav Shach refused to sign. So they asked Rav Shach, how can it be? All the Rebbeim is signed up, and all the Sephardic Rabbanim is signed up, and the Eder Charedin is signed up, and Reb Kefet even agrees women shouldn't wear shekels. Why does Rav Shach refuse to sign up? And Rav Shach answered, I saw the Chafetz Chaim, sein Freyes gegangen mit der Shekel, Chafetz Chaim's wife went with a Shekel. Rav Shach refused to sign. I have qualms when, you know, the Reb Kefet talk, when the Shekel makes the woman look better than she naturally does. And I have to say that a very great woman who I know for many, many decades, and she put a shekel on when she came to Israel, and she showed me she bought a shekel with white hairs in it. Shouldn't be any different than her regular hair. I said, kolak havod. Okay. Now, I quoted in class that the Sheirim, the Zeicher Mori Rebbe, that the Rav gave the Yotzei Drasha on the Tumas Sorat. And my Talmud, I.A. Liebman, sent me information that that Judge Saint Russia was 1952, and that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein says it was the first Yard Saint Russia that he attended. So we now have dated it. All right, and now let's roll, let's pick up. It's a very fascinating topic, the Chazon Ish, but it's not just the Chazon Ish, and as I showed you last week, or the last weeks, Rav Menashe Klein, Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and we saw in great detail last week, Rav Moshe Feinstein in a number of different shuvot, there is this point of view that we cannot be overwhelmed by ancient manuscripts which turn up. even if they're manuscripts of the Meiri, even if they're manuscripts of the Rishonim, even if they're manuscripts of Gedolei Yisrael, but we cannot be overwhelmed. And there are many reasons why. The Rav, of course, tradition that when it comes to Svara, everyone is independent. We're Lithuanians. We're not Chassidim. We all think differently, and that's wonderful, and that's good, and there's Beit Shammai, and there's Beit Hillel, and there's Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Meir, and there's Abaya, and Rabba, there's Rabbi Shmuel, Rish Lakis, and Rabbi Yochanan, etc., etc., the Rambam, and the Raivit, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah. You all understand, we all think differently. When it comes to living halacha, living Mesorah, there we have Hashkacha Pratit, and we cannot interfere with that which our parents did, that which our Rebbeim did, what they gave us counts. And the most shocking, blatant example of the Rav's thinking is Chelet Tzitzit. All of you know that with the modern era, so many different, the Rajiner and the Herzog, and now in the State of Israel, and the claims are made, and so much has been written, that we have the real Tehillah today. No? Do we have to go out and buy Tzitzit? Many people did, including why Rashi Yeshiva. Evidently, those Rashi Yeshiva either disagreed with Mori Rebbe or had cotton in their ears whenever the Rav would make reference to it.
It's not so impressive. But
one second.
He's locked into a certain frame. Because if they didn't do something 200 years ago, 100 years ago, and now the opportunity is to have that.
So
what is Kefema?
Rabbi Rubin, are you wearing Tchelet Tzitzit?
No, I wear Tchelet Tzitzit.
Tchelet on your talis doesn't count. Cut it out. I also wear tchelet on my talis every day. You think you're the only one? I have three different taliyot. Shabbos totally white. Davening in the morning, blue and white, because I'm a good Jew. I'm a Zionist. Read the book, B'nativ Adam Amar, what they say about my Zionism. For once, I don't have to blow my own horn. I have to send you to Washington, Baruch Hashem. Someone who won Pras Yisrael, met Malkus Shabbos, said, you're the stars of the book, the stars of the book. Baruch Hashem. When I travel, I wear a black and white talit. Why? Because I'm davening in Borough Park. I'm davening who knows where. I want people to have a kefir. And they understand blue and white. Why do they understand blue and white in the five towns in Borough Park and West Hempstead where they're living? So there I wear a traditional talit. But Rabbi Yitzchak, that accomplishes nothing. If you wear a blue shirt and you rip it up, you got to put on tzitzit. So what? What color are your tzitzit, young man? Ah, so you're attacking Moreinu v'Rabbeinu? You are a hypocrite! Show me Tchelet Tzitzit, and then you can speak. But anyway, we're going to change, we're going to shift gears. Yitz, in a minute we're going to shift. But we got to understand the Rav, because if you start in that the Tzitzit has to have Tchelet, and you find a new Gerser in the Torah, and you found the Rishon that no one knew, and it affects the Psak of the Ramah, what's going to be with Torah? That was their point of view.
Ari Greenspan.
We know that, Ari, Dr. Greenspan.
He was the top of the Rav.
Please, don't make him that old. Ari Greenspan, if he saw the Rav in his lifetime, I'll be impressed. He was not a Talmud of the Rav, but Ari, his father, was our classmate. Alan, Doc Greenspan, his wife, I believe his wife was my student, his sister was my student, his brother-in-law was my student.
But you see, this is the danger of the Bobby Long sponsor. On one hand, it's tremendous, because on one disc you're getting thousands and thousands
right.
of people. But who? All of a sudden somebody reads that someone somewhere in Italy, or in the Sarajevo or somewhere, had an opinion. And all of a sudden, that becomes, so what?
Yitzchak, I'm going to demonstrate against the car. Right after they form a new government, when everyone is relaxed and Syria is a little quieter, we're going to have a major demonstration against cars. Since cars were invented, over 30 million people were killed. This week in Israel, a woman crossing on a crosswalk was killed. Okay? You're going to come to the demonstration? No cars. You think I have a chance? There was a big demonstration against computers. They filled, what's it called, City Stadium, I guess, Shea Stadium, well, you can correct me, doesn't matter. They filled the stadium. People went under the gun. Either you go or your children are kicked out of Bais Yaakov. Yitzhak, the computer is here to stay. The cars are here to stay. The Bar Ilan Index is here to stay. And Rebbeim have a job to give their students future Gedolei Yisrael, Rabbanim, Ruvhakim, Poskim, Tzadikim, Chassidim, Anshei Maisa, how to be good Jews. And we have to find the balance. That's what we're doing right here on a higher level. It's not, you know, not a popular level. Now, my dear student, Danny Schulman, gave me a printout from Rabbi Dr. Daniel Sperber. Now, Rabbi Sperber is a controversial individual. I know him 44 years from the day I came in Aliyah. Say that it's not for me to...
He was in the Post today.
Believe me, he was on the front page of the New York Times, that women can have Aliyah. And here he's discussing the Chazon Ish. However, I think it is fair to say that the position of the Chazon Ish is hardly mainstream. And here I have to tell you, I don't believe that is correct. The position of the Chazon Ish, look who backs him up, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Rebbe Nasha HaKatan, Rebbe Moshe Feinstein. So, I cannot say it's not mainstream, but there is another opinion. And let me begin. We're going to reach a problem today that you'll think about for the next 49 years, and you'll let me know what conclusion you reached. That's also part of life. Not everything can we give a definitive answer. And now I want to mention once again my Talmud Dov Raifa in Muncie, who sent me to this source. I did not know it. He wasn't exactly sure where, but I found exactly what he was referring to, and it is a fabulous source. My dear friends, what is the latest volume quoted in Tosfot? The Sheiltot. You all know the Sheiltot. Sheiltot, Rav Achai Gon, Gonic work, quoted in Tosfot. Sheiltot, very fascinating work. Has anyone here ever studied the Sheiltot? Where do you find an example of the Sheiltot in Shas? Masechet Shabbos, Daf Lamed. What was the Sheiltot? And I want to be very brief. I think I spoke about this many, many, many years ago when I dealt with the history of Torah in modern times and I dealt with scientific Jewish scholarship. To be very brief, once upon a time, all Jews worked. Working for a living was considered the sine qua non requirement for a dignified existence. So when Jews worked, they were tired. How much could they study during the week? We know this from Golnik literature, by the way. Shabbat, they didn't work. So Shabbat, Nachta Chalent, they had a big drasha in the synagogue. Michael, there is only one problem. Have you eaten Chalent recently? Chalent has the power of inducing sleep, whatever the reasons are. So when a Rebbe got up to give a talk, and by the way, what I'm saying is very serious scholarship now. Okay, but say that, but youngsters here don't have to sleep, but during the week they never sleep, they're not like us. Shabbos afternoon, nacht de cholent, nacht de kugel, come on, a shtickle herring, a little whiskey, a chassidish Shabbos. A chassidish Shabbos, okay, you're getting excited here, but relax. So a Rebbe gets up to speak. No, the worst situation is when you get up to speak and the balabatim are So what was the technique they used? What does the word she'ilta mean? A question. They began with the question. Ah, people hear a question. This is the Gemara in Shabbos. You can look it up. Daf Lamed. It's a whole she'ilta. It's unbelievable. What was the question? Are you allowed to blow out a candle on Shabbos if it's affecting the health of a sick person? He doesn't want light. He doesn't want the candle. Can you blow it out? That was the question, an interesting question. And they don't answer. They go into a whole discussion of life and death, and that a living dog is more than a dead lion. It's the Gemara with David HaMelech, and David HaMelech dies on Shabbat. Finally, at the end of the whole She'ilta, oh, and in relation to your question, you're allowed to blow out the candle. A person is more important than the candle. You'll see the Gemara. That's the classic example of a Shilta. The She'ilta does on every Pasha. It begins with questions, gives you a long discourse. At the end of the discourse, it gives you the answers. The technique was to keep people asleep. For instance,
I just not pikuach nefesh.
What? It's pikuach nefesh if you don't
love.
For an example, someone is mentally ill and the light drives him hysterical and he can commit suicide. Blow out the candle. He shouldn't see light. Let him lie in the darkness. Okay, well, that's what we're talking about. It's an extreme example, but that's what the Pikuach Nefesh is about on Shabbat. My dear students, when I turn back the clock in this room, let's go back to 1976. And here I am teaching a bunch of BMT hotshots. These are kids, 18, 19, 20. Their minds are as interested in Torah Hashem Tamima as I am in the Chinese Revolution. But you got to get their attention. Gentlemen, I'd like to begin today's class on the history of the Briska method by asking a simple question. If you meet your girlfriend at Ricci's Pizza Saturday night and you give her a good Devat Torah and the girl sticks out her hand to give you Yashikayach, are you allowed to shake her hand? 32 kids lean forward. I then give an hour and a half class. They're catching every word. At the end of the class, Rebbe, what's the answer to the question? What question? Oh, that question? What, are you an idiot? Of course you're not allowed. What are we talking about? We're not talking about an 80-year-old lady who's giving you a Shalom Aleichem, Rebbe. We're talking about, don't bring me down from the Rebbe. I'm from Rav Hirsch. Don't bring me from the Jain. I know everything. For you, it's Asa. What kind of foolish question is that? Rebbe, you asked the question an hour and 35 minutes ago. Oh, I asked the question, I don't know, I forgot already. All right, I answered the question. The meantime, and that's the Shilta. Now, the Shilta, I had an entire course in the St. Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, so I have to tell you, I know a little bit about the Shilta and the literature. Now, he had a very fascinating individual who many of you only know superficially. The Netziv of Voloshin, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He was the Rav's great-grandfather. The Rav called him Reb Heschel Leib. And all the years I sat in front of the Rav, Habich Gehet from the Rav, he would say over things from my Nelta Zayda, Reb Heschel Leib, Reb Heschel Leib. And it took me many years to learn that the Netziv, who I knew as the Netziv, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and Reb Heschel Leib were one and the same. Reb Heschel Leib's son-in-law was Reb Rafal Shapiro, the Lashon Rosh Yeshiva. Reb Rafal Shapiro had a daughter, Lifsha, who made a shidduch with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had a son, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and Reb Moshe had a son, Moriah Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi. So that's how the Netziv, the Rav, descends from the Netziv.
Didn't they have a sichsuch?
No. The Netziv had a sichsuch. What you call a sichsuch was with Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi, the Beit HaLevi. That's 1852, 1853. The Lashon was shaking. The Rav wasn't born yet. The Rav was only born in 1903. You understand? But that's his Elta Zeda. On the other side, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi, the father of Reb Chaim. Okay, you're correct. But that's not for now, because if I start talking about what they argued, it would take up the next hour. Okay. Now, the Netziv was very interesting. No one knew how great he was. It's fascinating. The Ritzel of Eloshim took him as a son-in-law, but they weren't mijaches to him. They didn't realize who he was. He was quiet. He was always learning. He was an unbelievable baki. Kol HaTorah Kula. Part of the Sitzuch, he was not like Reb Yosef Dov. He was not like Reb Chaim. He didn't have that harifut. His godlet was bekiyut. And that's an old question. You all know the end of the Gemara, Brachat Sinai va'oka harim mi adif. And that argument goes on into today. Who do you appreciate more? A sharp, caustic, innovative mind or the tremendous baki? Sinai is bekiyut, oka harim is harifut. Who is more important? All right. Now, the Netziv's breathtaking knowledge got him involved in the Shiltot. Who paid attention to the Shiltot? Who knew about the Shiltot? Which yeshiva boy cared about the Shiltot? All right, he knew. Tosa quotes him in a few places. The Netziv, as a young man, this is his first major work, wrote a tremendous perish, ha'amake she'ela, to go deep into the questions, to play on the words, to go deep into the shiltot. And he throws around all his knowledge, what are the sources of the shiltot, and what is the Bavli, and what is the Yerushalmi, and what is the halacha, and he writes this tremendous perish. Now, he already sensed, when you deal with the Shiltot, you're dealing with a text that was really never studied. Because it was never studied, it was never polished. We can feel in the text their words missing. People copied it. People didn't pay attention. People did not correct it. He felt the need to really look under the carpet. What is the real text? Now you should know, this she'iltot remained hamek she'ela, perhaps the most outstanding work of the Netziv, although there's hamek davran chumash, there's meshiv davi, he was a posek, he was is eshkalot, he was all over. He wrote other pirushim on the halachic midrashim. There's no end to what the Netziv wrote. Who came along and gave us an edited, authoritative, critical edition of the Shiltot, perhaps 70 years after the Netziv finished the Hamek Sheila, perhaps 80, 90 years after, a product of Yerushalayim who winds up in America, gets a PhD in middle age from Columbia University, teaches in Bernard Revel Graduate School, rabbi of the Young Israel of Borough Park, make believe, no, give me the name, so the Shmuel Kalman Mirsky, Harav Dakta, a very fascinating individual, rabbi of Young Israel, is a real Young Israel then. Some of the Balabatim tolerated him, some didn't. When they had to re-elect him, people blocked the streets with their cars so the enemy shouldn't come to vote him out of office, blocked the streets so that they couldn't get to the Young Israel. He was my professor in graduate school, the father of Professor David Mirsky, Zichrono Levracha, who was the dean of Stern College, if you recognize the name. Their grandchildren, whoever, one is very active in Chovevei Torah circles, or very, very liberal Orthodox, I would call him. I believe his name is Yehuda Mirsky, then there's Moshe Mirsky. I taught one of the brothers. This is the family. Now, he gave us the edited edition, and the edited edition has been published and republished many times by Mossad Rav Kook. He died before he completed the work. It was his son, Professor David Mirsky, who was one of the finest individuals you could ever meet. As a mensch, as a Edelkeit. I don't know how to say it in English. So decent. What an individual. He died young, unfortunately. He finished his father's work. So today, when you study the She'il Tot, you have to use, first of all, the edited edition to get the proper text. And then if you want to see the Lumdus, the comparison, the Bavli, did you show me, where did he get it from? You have to see the Hamek She'ila. Now, in the initial volume to the She'il Tot, the Netziv has a beautiful introduction. Petach Ha'emek, the opening to the valley. Follow me? Opening to the, is there a better word for opening? The portal? The portal perhaps sounds better. You know, you go into a cave, there's an opening. The portal, the entrance to the valley. Now, on page Yud, in the introduction, he deals with this very problem of manuscripts. And probably because he was involved with the She'il Tot, because he felt the tension in every line, something is missing. It's a non sequitur. It doesn't jive together. The puzzle is lacking. He was very sensitive to new manuscripts. And he absolutely felt we should do all we can to find them, to edit them, and that it could very well affect current practice. Had a different approach altogether. And he says on this page, Yud, and he goes into the whole question of Acharei Rabim Lahatot, and he takes the approach, Acharei Rabim Lahatot, does this tape was on me, it's recording? Yeah, and this one is in front of me because it's covered up, I just moved it. And I trust it's recording. And Acharei Rabim Lahatot does not apply beyond the generation. It's only when the Beis Din is sitting. It's only when they stand up and count. But in a later generation, you have new information. You don't have to worry about what happened 100 years earlier, 200 years earlier. It could very well be. You'll take the Chazon Ish's approach. You'll take Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik's approach. You'll take the Lubavitcher Rebbe's approach. This generation, that generation, hundreds of Rabbanim, Gedolei Yisrael, Rishonim, Achronim, did it a certain way. Who are you to come along in the year 2014 and say, I found a new manuscript? He says, no, that the concept of Acharei Rabim Lahatot is only at that moment in that generation when you're standing up and you're being counted. But in a later generation, halacha kabatra'i, ein ladayan elamashenavro ot. And he is totally much broader in his approach. Umeyata aleinu lirot mashalafaneinu b'chomakom. Shenimtsa Rabbeinu Mechulak Imcha Poskim. Now we have to pay attention. Wherever the She'il Tot, who he calls Rabbeinu, it means the author of the She'il Tot, wherever he argues with other Poskim, we have to pay attention. We have to figure it out. And even though Gedolim came after him who didn't Poskim like him, but they never saw the She'il Tot. Could very well be. Had they seen the She'il Tot, they wouldn't have paskened the way they did. You follow me, Daniel? This is the Netziv. V'yesh tikva asha. Look at his words. Ozadu ala tzadik. V'golem kadmon rabbeinu zichrona levracha yifrach kelevanon. Pri amal Torah bidorat achronim. You see, he totally identifies with the shield part. I'll comment on that in a second. It blows the mind how broad the Netziv was. And now that we're finding manuscripts, now that I'm writing a commentary, now that I'm trying to understand him and popularize him, Or Zaruel HaTzadik, and his fame should spread. And I just want to say something, because it affects tomorrow's shir even more than today. But you see, when you write, when you're a young man, and this is his first work, and this work makes him world Torah famous, you identify with the Shiltat. It becomes part of him. He breathes the air of the Shiltat. It's like God sent them on this world to resuscitate the Shiltat. I would use the word Techiyat HaMetim of the Shiltat. And he writes with such feeling, Arzaruel HaTzadik, and may his fame spread. Okay. Now I want to show you something else that's overwhelming to me. Daf Yud Bet, page 12. What goes on in life? You publish. Okay. Someone cites you, quotes you. Someone reprints what you published. What should your attitude be? Tell you a little story. When Bernie Shopstein, should live and be well, of Ketav, heard I was working on this manuscript on the Rav, and he had a good, it turned into be a very wise decision for him. So it was wise because it opened the door to endless other publications on the Rav. There's a whole story to it that I can tell to you in a nutshell. But he contacted me, and I told him, look, I'm not yet ready, and then whatever, if you read Washington, I tell the story when I showed it to him the first time, with Professor Elman, what happened, Baruch Hashem. So when he's getting ready to publish, I told him, in every book that's published today, they have a whole paragraph. It is forbidden to copy, to photograph, to photocopy, to Xerox, you know what I'm talking about? Without the express permission of the publisher, etc., etc. So I told Bernie, please, leave that out. Let anyone copy. This is in memory of my Rebbe. Baruch Hashem. And he said to me, he can't leave it out because otherwise the Publishers Association will kick him out. Something to do with being part of the Publishers Association. All right, be it as it may. So I thought all these years that this was Rakefet, nice guy, thank God, not money crazy, not a money grabber, call it what you wish. I thought this was unique. I take a look on Amid Yud Bet, then its Siv says exactly the same thing. And he says, I want everyone to know that I give full permission to anyone in this country or in another country. Hineni mashelo b'lo mechir. No charge, no royalties, no percentages. I give him full permission to reprint this work. I want to read the words to you. This is unique. Goshen rots misha rots alad pisifri ze b'medina o b'medina acheret. Hineni mashelo b'lo mechir. Ve'hineni noten lo hakol b'yayin yafar. Lahadil torat rabbeinu zichrona levracha. Beautiful. He says, I have only one request. Listen to this request. If you reprint it, in my lifetime, or in my son's lifetime, who is the son? Who is he talking about here? Reb Chaim Berlin. How many of you went to Metifta Chaim Berlin? How many of you have uncles, great uncles, who went to Metifta Chaim Berlin? You're sitting right in front of me. This was his eldest son. His youngest son was 48 years younger Mayor of Berlin. 48 years, Kesky, it's not the same wife. No woman can give birth for 48 years going. His first wife died, he married his niece, the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter, a much younger woman, I believe, I believe she was divorced, she was a grusha. And she made it tonight, she had married the Netziv, but he has to try to father a child, and he fathered a child, I believe he was over 70, when he fathered Reb Meir Berlin, who is known to you as Reb Meir Bar Ilan. So here he says, if you're going to republish it in my lifetime, or my son Hagon, Reb Chaim Berlin, I only make one request, let me know you're doing it, because I'm constantly finding new material, and I may want to make changes. Azayo de any mizekiu lai old chadashot imadi. Oh, avola takein halashon. And here he says, listen to these words. I couldn't get over the Hebrew. He says, especially the early part of the work. Ashe tiron hayiti. Tiron. That's a modern Hebrew word. The tiron. No, tiranut. A beginner, a tyro. It evidently is a Greek and Latin word going back to rabbinic sources. But he's using modern Hebrew. I don't know if anyone realizes this.
Army basic training.
Army basic training. Tiranut, exactly. A tiron. Oh, wow. It's a private. First, a buck private. A tiron. And he says, what modesty. What understanding, what dignity, what broadness, what a sweet Torah individual. Can you understand why we revere the memory of the Netziv? Wow. So, I'm not the first one who wanted to say, it's all open. Copy, reprint, republish. And all of you know I have never turned down a request. I only feel bad. Some of my scholarship has been robbed. Someone once took a very important postdoctoral research article, republished it under his own name. It was Mamish Gnuvatiyon. And to say that, no, it's not my nature to. All I can tell you is we're in the same room together, which may happen once in a yovel. He's there, I'm here. I notice he never looks at me. He always walks into the opposite corner. Now, excuse me? I understand, but it's not my nature to fight. We got to go further. We have to build. We have to create. The next paragraph on that same page, here he is. Total opposition to the Chazon Ish. And he says, Ki old yitoreru arayot shebechabura lavach haray lilkot orot midugdak sifrei bahagre fisha sifrei goyim kavon lahakiv devreim lachakra v'yimtzuna haray dvash v'chalav tachat lishonam hakatzea atzuna עד שיהיו בשנים הבאות ספרי הגונים לאבוקה גדולה ומאירה והיה לאור ההלכה וההוראה תכלית כל עמל תורה כאשר זאת התודה בישראל לפנים. When you cannot top those words, he says, I look forward to the day, I hope for the day when others will follow me, when the giants of knowledge will come along and work and issue edited editions of all the Gaonic literature. He mentions the Bahad, which later we already have two or three edited editions since the Netziv said that. And he says this will have a tremendous influence on the Psak Halakha.
Wow. What did Rav Chaim Soloveitchik think of this?
This is Rav Chaim's grandfather-in-law. Rav Chaim was like the Netziv? No. Rav Chaim was much more like the Beit HaLevi. What did he think of this? I think Rav Chaim had a benevolent viewpoint. Schatten kennt das nicht, but it's not something we would run after. It can't harm. Well, the Rav, you know, you saw the Rav. Unless the Berlin period, as we said last week, as you complimented me for being intellectually honest, which is, you know, axiomatic to being a Talmud of the Rav. It could be in Berlin the Rav was more exposed and more favorable. But certainly the Rav we knew, and time and again he came out against the Rajinit Zitzit. So that tells you where the Rav stood. Look, this is a very delicate question. Because if the Netziv is right, then it means the Shulchan Aruch we're living by may not be entirely correct. In 50 years there'll be a slightly different Shulchan Aruch. In 100 years, the Netziv would say, what's the problem? Acharei Rabban lahatot in that generation. Afterwards, halacha kabakrahi. But you see, this is a litvish, a very litvish approach.
Have you not told the gentleman
that? One second. A chassid could not take this point of view. The Rajina was revolutionary considering he was a chassid. Because if you follow the chassidic lifestyle and their teachings and their musa and all, you look into Williamsburg. The book on Williamsburg by Gershon Kranzler, by George Kranzler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So it was his doctorate at Columbia U, at the New School of Social Research, and a brilliant doctorate. So he has interviews there with people from Williamsburg, people who came in the 30s or after the Holocaust. And you see what they say. We didn't come to America because we wanted to. We came to America to save our lives. And we are proud to say we are raising our children here just the way we would have raised them in the Alte Heim, in the old country. See, Hasidus, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was revolutionary. He gave up the Shtreimel. All right, we're going to talk about why he gave up the Shtreimel, but not now. But what's important is to understand the Rebbe was very innovative. But the Hasidus in general take bells today. Take care, take Bavov, take Vishnitz. I think with these names, we'll take some of the Russian dynasties. Hadash Asumin HaTorah. Vida Tato HaKigayin. Daf the Enigel Gain. Like the grandfather went, the father went, that's the way the grandson has to go. The dress is the same. The thinking is the same. The davening is the same. You understand? But here than at Siv, this is a totally different approach. And it's black and white. You can't escape it. You can't reinterpret it. Black and white. But I'm only beginning. Yes, Irby, what did you want to say?
No,
change halakha? Well, we're going to discuss this in great depth. We're going to get there.
Well, you say that at Siv, the next generation should alter a little what the previous generation. You're talking about changing
a lot. Yeah, but you're talking about, we're not talking about matters that are Torah law, the Oraita law. These are rabbinic laws. Minhag. You're talking about side issues where there's machloket rishonim, where we're not certain now. You find new material. So you get, you understand, if someone says you can't, that if someone tells you that it's a, you know, that wearing a yarmulke is from the Torah, how do you know? Vayelech Avraham. Avraham shall gain on a yarmulke. Avraham, vayelech Avraham. Avraham should go without a yarmulke. You never heard that from your Rebbeim? I used to hear that from
you. I heard it on Vayetze
Yaakov. Vayetze Yaakov. So, gain on a yarmulke. But if you can show manuscripts, Jews are all right, the yarmulke. Believe me, I wear a yarmulke.
150 years old.
Well, it's longer than that. It goes back already to Yosef, the Rishonim already, the German Rishonim. But the concept of wearing a yarmulke all the time today in Israel is a modern concept.
Cyclone sources that in Spain they daven without.
Cyclone birth sources like that, all right? Anything is possible. There's an open medrash, the medrash rabbah.
You see you're changing everything.
No, you can't
read. I'm
going to show you more. But listen, I'm not telling you that Tziv would change everything, but he leaves open the importance of finding manuscripts.
So you cannot jump on Daniel Sperber if he's calling sources
also? No. All I'm saying with Daniel Sperber is that to call the Chazon Ish, a shita d'chuy is not entirely correct, because it's not just the Chazon Ish, it's Morinu v'Rabbeinu, it's the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's the Reb Menashe HaKotan, etc., etc. So I would not dismiss the Chazon Ish as glibly as Professor Sperber does. Okay, but he's entitled to his opinion, and as I'm showing you, I just showed you the Netziv. I mean, this is the Netziv of the legend. It's a very powerful source. But this is not the only source. And here I'm going to introduce, it's going to take the rest of the hour, I'm going to introduce a very interesting question. I'm going to introduce it very innocently first. In 1962, the United States of America was shaking. Was shaking because a doctorate, which I believe was accomplished in Harvard in 61, was published, and the publication of this doctorate was a very important achievement for the United States. The name of the doctorate, as it was published, the Rabbad of Posky Air, a 12th century Talmudist. The author of the doctorate, Dananda Harry Wolfson, Professor Wolfson, was a young man by the name of Isidore Twersky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. You all recognize the name. This is Yitzchak Twersky, son-in-law of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, married to his eldest child, Atara, the son of the Tolna Rebbe of Boston. To put him into context, the father of YU Rosh Yeshiva today, Rav Meir Twersky, who I'm told just opened the Tolna Shtibel in Riverdale. Yitzchak Twersky, whom I had the honor, the pleasure, the skut to know quite well to a certain degree. Very fascinating individual. To describe him, he really was a Rebbe / Harvard University professor. Yitzchak, you probably knew him too. You didn't know him? How could it be you didn't know him? Or you knew him from the Vikings?
Didn't know him at all.
Didn't know him at all. Wow. Even though you were born and bred in Boston. He went to Catholic high school. What's it called? It's supposed to be the top high school in Massachusetts. You know what I'm talking about? Catholic Boys, I think it's called. He had a very fascinating education. He went to Maimonides, then he went to a general high school. And I don't know if Maimonides had a high school yet. I don't think they did. And he studied, you know, with his father, the Rebbeshe tradition, the Twersky family. I don't have to tell you what a well-known Hasidic, this is the Chernobyl family. Endless, I have taught over the years, hundreds and hundreds of members of the greater Twersky family. Growing up in the Bronx, no matter where you grew up, Philadelphia, Boston, the Bronx, Minneapolis, you always came across, Denver, you always came across a scion of the Twersky family.
Mordechai Twersky?
No, I don't believe so.
He was a writer for Haaretz.
No, I don't believe so. Now, what was so great, what was so important about this doctorate? Until this doctorate appeared, there had never been real scholarly, scientific Jewish scholarship done in the United States. Yes, you had people like Solomon Zeitlin, like Harry Wolfson, you had some famous names, but they were all trained in Europe. They all came to America. It's like saying Reb Moshe Feinstein is a product of the United States. If anyone says Reb Moshe Feinstein is a, you follow me, Israel? If anyone says Reb Moshe Feinstein is a product of the United States, take his tongue out, salt it, and put it on display in a cave. Reb Moshe Feinstein is a product of the Litvish Welt. In America, they asked him many questions. and his volumes reflect American life, but he's not a product of the United States. To call the Rav a product of the United States would be a misnomer. The Rav was a product of his father's home of brisk, sharpened and polished by the Hasidic world of Haslavich and the great open humanistic world of Berlin. But yes, he was influenced by America, his hashkafa, his outlook, but the basic gestalt was Isha Halakha that certainly had very little to do with Boston, Massachusetts, and a handful of Shomer Shabbos Jews. Professor Tversky was an American product. And this was a brilliant doctorate on the Rabbad, who he was, what he did. It involved learning, knowledge, going through subject with his father-in-law, as he writes in the introduction, with Moreno Rabbeinu Rav Soloveitchik. It involved a very scientific, scholarly approach. Now, beginning on page 77, Professor Tversky discusses, in this chapter, he's discussing all the works of the Ravid. By the way, just for the sake of scholarly honesty, because I know people around the world would shoot at me, this work by Professor Tversky was very strongly criticized in about a 96-page review, article, critique, many, many years later in the 1990s, by Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, by his brother-in-law. And I'm aware of the critique. Just let me think for 1 minute. I said 1990s. It could be the late 1980s the critique appeared. And I'm very well aware of it. And some of the criticism is justified, but I have to tell you, my classmate, Dr. Grach, as my students call him, is a perfectionist of a perfectionist of a perfectionist. So I often say that to meet Chaim's standards, no mortal can live up to it. And Reb Chaim, in his review, mentions that in Kabbalah, the chapter where he deals with the Ravid in Kabbalah, the Rabbad in Kabbalah, that there, the chapter is good. So Reb Kefet adds a postscript. I don't know if Chaim is a big, how knowledgeable he is in Kabbalah. You follow me? So when you only have a basic knowledge of Kabbalah, there you're not critical. But where no one can equal Reb Chaim's knowledge, there he's critical. But even with the criticisms of Dr. Grach, some 25, 30 years later, nevertheless, the Rabbat of Poskier was an epic-making work that in American soil we could turn out a Talmud Chacham, who also has scientific Jewish scholarship, and could produce a work of this magnitude. Later he does a major work, Introduction to Maimonides, the Maimonides Reader. Professor Tversky was outstanding. It just breaks the heart that he died young, didn't hit his 70th birthday, and died in the midst of tremendous scholarship, undertaking, achievement, vision, etc. Now, beginning on page 77, he deals with the Ravid's commentary on Shas. Tell me, how many of you have learned Shas already? How many of you? No, you're all learning. All right, how many of you? All right, I may be the only one in the room who can say he already made a few siyumim on Shas. Okay. But I don't mean that way. I mean, how many of you, you're learning Shas? Rashi, Tosfot, Rashba, Ritba, Meiri. How many of you heard of the Ravid on Shas? I didn't. You didn't. Wake me up in the middle of the night. Arnie, what's the Ravid? The Ravid? Critique of the Rambam, commentary on the Rambam. Half my life I spent in the Rav Shir. Machlokes, the Ravid and the Rambam. What's the Machlokes about? What's the source? Reb Chaim, the Ravid, the Rambam. Any Rosh Yeshiva walks in today, you can get a canned shear. There's so many svarim available, the shear of Rav Gusman, the shear of Rav Zavar, this Rosh Yeshiva, that Rosh Yeshiva, and two-thirds of the time, they're involved with a Raivan and a Rambam. So you take it and you give it a little kvetch, Kona Yedei Shinu, you follow me? And it's yours, it's yours. Okay, Chesky, you follow me? A little kvetch, Baruch Hashem. What Raivan and Shas? Not only that, he quotes the Meiri, where the Meiri refers to the fact that there was Chiber Perushim B'chol HaTalmud, that the Raivan wrote a perush on the entire Talmud. And the Meiri calls him Megedolei HaMefarshim. If you recall, the Meiri gives titles to everyone. And he calls the Raivan Megedolei HaMefarshim. And he talks about the fact that he wrote a perush on all of Shas. Now, we don't have this perush. But the Meiri, and then Professor Tversky, brings other sources, other Rishonim, who refer to the Raivid. And he gives a whole list of Mesechtot. He quotes from the scholarship of those that came before him. And he gives a whole list of 24 different Mesechtot where people refer to a perush of the Raivid in the Rishonim. So he tries to explain why we don't have a Raivid, why it didn't survive, and just take out 1 second, the thrust of what Professor Tversky is saying is very simple, that everyone had Rashi in Tosfot. If you had the Sfadic tradition, you had the Perush of Rabbeinu Hananel. Perushim survived when they were needed. When they were needed, they were studied. When they were studied, they were copied. The perush of the Raivad was not needed. That's his theory. They already had the Ashkenazic traditions. They already had the Sephardic traditions, as we call them, the Palestinian traditions, or the Babylonian traditions. They didn't need another perush. So unlike his critique of the Rambam, where whenever the Rambam was published, they later published the critique of the Raivid, we don't have the Raivid on Shas. Shita Mukubetzat quotes the Raivid extensively, particularly on Baba Kama. And when it comes to Baba Kama, I quote Professor Tversky, the only complete manuscript to be printed is the commentary on Baba Kama. And who printed this commentary? Who edited it? Who went through all the manuscripts? Professor Shmuel Atlas, or Samuel Atlas. Okay. Yeah.
Hold on,
Yitzchak Savlanut. Savlanut. Professor Shmuel Atlas. He edited it. He published it. And Tversky compliments him. Did a good job. Excellent edition. My dear students, who is Shmuel Atlas? This is what Yitzchak is alluding to. Shmuel Atlas, one of the leading Litvisha families. His father, his uncle, Gedolei Yisrael, Samuel Atlas, his years, 1899 1978. Who was he? Was one of the leading students of Reb Itzla Panovich, Reb Itzla Rabinovich. Studied in the greatest Lithuanian yeshiva. Then went to university in Russia, Germany. Did unbelievable work in the field of Talmudic research, Jewish philosophy. Came to America and became professor of Talmud at Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati. You're worried about the Svi Yehuda? Not just that. I know. But I know what you've told me. I know, Professor Svi Yehuda. He is an orthodox critic of the yeshiva world, quote unquote.
Of your Rebbe too.
I said the yeshiva world includes the Rav. Okay. So I'm a Zionist. We wouldn't have criticism. If we wouldn't be looking over our shoulders, we wouldn't be honest. You saw, I realized I'm quoting something and I'm not quoting the critique. 1,000 emails will come in. Hey, Rakefet, what are you praising Professor Tversky? Look what his brother-in-law did to him. What do you think? I don't know the critique by heart. I'll go page by page with you. But nevertheless, it was a great moment for American Jewry. My dear students, so what did I say? What did I say? Professor Atlas taught in Cincinnati at Hebrew Union College. All right, Professor Liebman taught at the seminary. No one will say that Professor Liebman was not Orthodox. Professor Avram Yoshua Heschel began his career in America in Hebrew Union College. Then he went to the seminary. No one will say that Professor Heschel was Mechalel Shabbos Chas V'Chalila. And we can go on and on. It's a very fascinating question. My Talmud, Mark Shapiro, Melech Shapiro, Rabbi Dr. Professor, gave an entire lecture, published an entire kuntris on Orthodox people who taught non-Orthodox institutions. But one second. Here Yitzchak alluded to something a little bit worse than just that. That Rakefet wouldn't give a guest lecture in the seminary, you can be certain. But that's Rakefet. Okay. There are some who might give a guest lecture and say, like, the whole question when they all come together and study? Limud. Am I right? That's the term they use? Limud. So in England, they wanted to know if I'll participate in Limud. So I said, no. I said, will your chief rabbi participate? No. So what do you want out of me? To come in an outsider and cause a commotion?
Wait, wait, Jonathan Sachs did not
participate? No, does not participate.
Why not?
Because I told you 1,000 times, because Rakepit is teaching in this room, a woman who's a reform rabbi who doesn't believe in God, who's a humanist, who's not even Jewish, only her father is Jewish, not her mother, is teaching in the other room.
Intellectual
Austrian. I am very proud to be accused of intellectual Austrian. Now, so Samuel Atlas, taught at Hebrew Union College. I'm now quoting to you from a Hebrew Union College fact sheet dealing with questions in their world.
Where did the Rav deal have any connection with him?
No. Is civil divorce enough? And here's the question. Civil divorce. You got to remember, when it comes to Shabbat and Kashrut, no one affects the other Jew. You keep kosher, this one doesn't keep kosher. This one is Shema Shabbos, this one, so what? Do what you want. Democracy. Right or wrong? We walk the streets of Yerushalayim, cars are driving. All right, I personally am a kanoi, I have to admit it. It bothers me that cars drive on Shabbos. But all right, I'm a kanoi. There's a whole new generation already, freedom of choice, democracy. I'm not a great believer in total democracy. Democracy has certain limits. Israel has, at certain times, too much democracy. We allow people a fifth column in the state, Haaretz, to publish what they publish, and they can get away with it. It couldn't happen in America. There'd be a tremendous outcry, and there are probably laws that they're transgressing. But we have a tremendous democracy here. Fine. No, you take the divorce and marriage affects every Jew. I'm walking along the street, a student comes over to me, Rebbe, can I marry this beautiful, wonderful, frum girl? What's the problem? What's the problem? Her mother was married twice and never got a get in between. She's from the second marriage. This affects us. We're one people. We're Am Yisrael.
She's a mamzer.
It could be. She's a mamzer. Absolutely. No, is civil divorce enough? Don't we have a klal? I know a guy named Aaron Rakefid, he gave a whole year's worth of shurim on dinah de malchut de dinah. What the government says is law. Four times in Shas, this is mentioned. Chayshin Mishpat is built upon it. Every sefer of Shelet and Shuvit that you will see, or you even, you'll take the Erech HaShulchan where he deals with dinah avdut. And it's always with an introduction that Mizman Hazeh, there's no Avdut, Dindu Malchut Dina, therefore all that I'm writing is in theory. It's not in practice. Is civil divorce enough? Well, you all know that Dindu Malchut Dina is in Dini Mamonot. It has nothing to do with Issa Vahetta. The government can say from today to tomorrow that you can eat pig, get slaughtered under sanitary conditions. We cannot eat pig. The government can say from today to tomorrow that it's no good to have a Shabbos every seventh day. We're instituting a system where there'll be a Shabbos every fifth day and every tenth day. That doesn't affect us. Shabbos is the seventh day, Vayichulo Shemayim Vaaretz, etc. You all know this. Dinah de Malchut de Dinah, yes. That with a handshake we complete a deal. The New York court held it up. A black man, an Afro-American, said to a Hasidic Yid, Mazel u'bracha, and the Hasidic Yid wanted to go back, and the court said, no, the Afro-American is right. In the Diamond District, Mazel u'bracha is sufficient. This is Dinah de Malchut. That you have to pay taxes is Dinah de Malchut. If you don't pay taxes, you're a Russia, you're a thief, you're a robber. You make it harder for the other members of society, because if you don't pay taxes, my taxes go up. Ask Yair Lapid, and he'll explain it to you, black and white. Reform and Reconstruction movements, how do they relate? Quote, Samuel Atlas, the Talmudist professor of philosophy at Hebrew Union College, determined that the meaning of Dinah de Malchut de Dinah, the law of the land is law, is a great principle of Jewish law. So much so that a civil divorce is a get. So the Reform Movement's posture is that the moment that a man and woman divorce in a civil court, in the United States, it is considered dissolved in the eyes of Jewish law. Gentlemen, is there any way we can defend Professor Atlas?
It's the same as saying patrilineal is okay. They accept it.
Yeah, patrilineal is this is probably worse because this is mamish mamzera. There's no way to fix it, to change it, to help it, to cure it. Patrilineal, you can always convert. This is a million times worse. And this is a litvisha gadol, a litvisha Talmud Chacham, who grew up in the litvisha Welt, whose father and uncle were Gedolei HaRabbanim. This is the Atlas family. And this is Cincinnati. This is Hebrew Union College. This is what is quoted in his name.
he must have understood the chaos that he was going to create.
When you believe that Chil Shabbos is permitted, Kashrut doesn't count, civil law is civil law, this is Atlas. What chaos? This is Judaism. Any innovator doesn't worry about the chaos. He thinks he has it right. He believes that he is correct. You understand? I can give you many examples, but it's not important now.
Wait a second, Pavlovsky was not this guy.
No, no. Don't confuse the two, please.
I understand.
Yeah, but this was... But I'm talking about Shmuel Atlas. Why am I talking about him? And now let me introduce what we're heading into.
He has sourced it from some small character.
No, hold on. Small character. The earth is shaking and you're talking small character. My dear students, so you see, Professor Tversky mentions his edited scientific edition of the Ra'abad on Baba Kama and praises it. That is nothing. With all due respect to Professor Tversky, born and bred in Boston. Since when does Boston turn out giants? Go back to Lithuania, I'm being a little bit prejudiced now, simply to get the point across. Nathaniel, go back to Lithuania. Lithuania turned out giants. And 110 years ago in Lithuania, there was no bigger young giant than a young kid in Slabodka named Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. He had the greatest mind. Fabulous bekiyut, tremendous insight, the ability to be machadesh, innovative thinking. But he had one fault. He was open-minded. He once was on a train, so we are told, it is anecdotal, but it's also brought down with sources by Reb Nissen Kamenetsky in Making of a Gadol. He's one of the big stars in Making of a Gadol. I don't believe he's the reason for the Cherem. I believe it's Reb Aaron Cutler's grandchildren and the foolishness around it. But the Chiyak of Weinberg, what stories. Wow. He's on a train. And he couldn't speak Russian. And he asked for directions. He didn't understand what they were telling him. And he wound up getting off at the wrong stop and he had to sleep in the station overnight, 24 hours, till the next train came that was going to the little village where Slabodka was. He made up his mind to learn Russian. The Alt of Slabodka was a great machanech. But here, there was a bit of a problem. He figured, got to marry him off at a young age. Well, he's going to broaden, and if you broaden, the chances were you'd become a Shmuel Atlas. You'd become an Epicurus. It's a terrible reality when you go to Chaim Berlin and go to Lakewood and then come to YU, why you should have never let you in. I told Rabbi Lamb this past summer, the biggest mistake YU made was to allowing kids from Brooklyn. By the way, Rabbi Lamb is from Williamsburg. The kids from Brooklyn, I give you a long list of kids from Brooklyn who came to YU who became apikarsim or semi-apikarsim. Couldn't handle it. A kid from the Bronx, like myself, from Yankee Stadium, YU was like a glove on a hand for us. The Rav from Boston, Harvard, Yale, Radcliffe, Wesley, like a glove on a hand. A kid from Brooklyn, Taylor the Das. I just heard my classmate Saul Berman on tape 40 years ago. I couldn't believe my ears. 40 years ago. Wow. Wow. No, get him married. Marry him off. The Bilshiki Rav died. His daughter was up for grabs. With the daughter came the rabbinate. No, when you're Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, you understand, you just can't pawn him off on any woman. the marriage didn't work out. He became Pilshiki Rav, got divorced, ran away to Berlin. You know, it was today, you get divorced, join the club. Every second Jew is divorced. David Goldberg sent me an article. The divorce rate in Israel, how it goes up, goes up, goes up. Okay. This is the reality today. Those days to get divorced, Shandon and Achepa. Go and tell them, Shandon and Achepa. Gentlemen, if you don't know Yiddish, you can't live a Jewish life. Period. Daniel, don't argue with the Rebbe. Take him with a grain of salt. Michael, he got divorced. He went to Berlin. Became Rav of a little East European shtibble there. Went to university. And he became the great Rebbe Yechiel Yaakov, rabbi, doctor, professor, head of Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary, a man who was so broad. He knew Shas, Kala, Torah, Kula. He knew Oriental languages. He knew biblical criticism. He knew theology. He knew philosophy. He gave lectures at the university. Hundreds would attend, the most brilliant Gentiles, to hear Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, Professor Weinberg, blown away by his knowledge. I don't have to tell you, my Talmud, who first heard about Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg in the room at the other end of this hall from his Rebbe, Aaron Lekefer in BMT, did a brilliant doctorate, the last doctorate done under Professor Twesky at Harvard, on Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. If you haven't studied that doctorate, you don't know how to breathe air. Broadened and wrote a great deal. Hitler suffered, never remarried, perfectionist, never remarried, survived by miracles, taken in by his Talmud in Switzerland. The Weingott family, Reb Scholl, his Talmud of the 30s, 1 year later the Talmud is killed by the trolley car. But he remains with that family, raises the Yatom, Reb Avram Abba, on his lap, his greatest Talmud post-World War II, the man who devotes his life, my chaver, to perpetuating his Rebbe's memory. Now, when did Professor Twesky do his doctorate? When was this published? 1962. It means he worked on it 58, 59, 60, 61. When did the Sri Deyesh start to appear? 1966. I believe only the first or second volume appeared during the Sri Deyesh's lifetime. The other two volumes came out afterwards. Mossad Rav Kook, the Sri Deyesh, I will show you next week, has an unbelievable section on the importance of proper manuscripts. And finding them, and editing them, and working with a scientific approach, because we need them for halacha. We can change. We have more knowledge available. He's exactly like the Netziv, and even stronger. And the greatest example he gives, and I'll show you next week, the Ra'abad on Baba Kama, and he praises Professor Atlas to the sky. His childhood acquaintance, a Gaon Adir, and this later results in one of the greatest controversies surrounding Professor Mark Shapiro's fabulous doctorate. Why? Because Mark didn't only write a doctorate, he has money at his disposal. He's professor at Scranton University, has the Weinberg chair, interestingly, the Weinberg chair, it's a Jewish family, gave a fortune to a Jesuit university. I believe Scranton is a Jesuit university, it's a Catholic university. Have the Weinberg chair. There's money for publication. He published endless letters of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, an entire correspondence with Atlas, and he writes about Atlas, and he talks about Atlas. Professor Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter got involved, looking into the Torah Mother journals. No? What should our attitude be to Professor Shmuel Atlas? Talmud Chacham Mufak. Apikoros to the second power. Look what happened. And yet, his fabulous edition of the Ra'abadim Baba Kama, no one has yet to go beyond Reb Shmuel Atlas. How can you not learn Baba Kama without the rival? And there he's Kulo, the yeshiva bacher who broadened.
This is like Rav Man Acher. I don't understand what you're building up like this.
I'm building up. You know how much was written on this controversy?
So there's a great man in one area.
One second. So Rabbi Reuben goes on record that it's like Achen, Rabbi Meir, the Gemara in Chagiga, take from Acher what you can and throw away the klipot. Could be you're absolutely right. Or, in part of the controversy, you see, how much did Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, sitting in a Winkel, in a little place in Switzerland, not in the mainstream, how much did he know about Professor Atlas of the 50s, of the 60s? It's a fascinating question. And you see, Alendorf, there's something very important here. The friends we make in our childhood are the strongest friendships we will ever have. Because you're impressionable. This is emotional development. It's youth. It's growing up. It's a shared said frame of references. When I meet someone who sat with me in the Rav Shir, we hug, we embrace. All the 60 years that have intervened since disappear in a second. We don't ask, where are you? What are you? There's something to be said. Habein Yakiri Li Ephraim Yelet Sha'ashu Im. And how many times the Rav said, in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't see us as sinners. He doesn't see us as adults who are rebelling and have our own opinions and we're smarter than anyone else. Habein Yakiri Li Ephraim. It's that little child with total faith, jumping up and down on his mother's lap, on his father's lap. Gentlemen, it's a fabulous question. I don't have a black and white answer. I agree with Yitzchak and I disagree with Yitzchak. I'm only a mortal, I'm only a human being. But I've set the stage for these 3-day Eish. You won't believe what you will see next week. This 3-day Eish, and then we go in to the greatest gadol alive and learning. Separate him from the political arena, Rav Ovadia Yosef. My dear students, what did we do today? I think we did okay. We had a few words of introduction, dealing with some of the correspondence, came up with the year the Rav gave, the Shnei Mesorot Shir, which I'm very proud, that's an achievement. Thank you. Thank you to Aryeh Lieberman in Chabad, Brooklyn, and we dealt with Professor Sperba, mentioned it, and then we went into the Netziv of Elushin, the Shil Tut, and from the Shil Tut to Professor Tweski, from Professor Tweski to Professor Atlas, from Professor Atlas, the introduction to the 3-day Eish. Tomorrow, Shir, I wouldn't miss for all the money that's being taken out of Syria.
Have a source for his
and I don't check it out. Go to the computer and punch and see what you come up with. I'm just quoting from their announcement. I can't understand it. How he can go so be so radical? But anything.
He was no longer showing this.
No, evidently. If he could say that, what do you want? If anyone wants the critique and the counter-critique on the Piskei Tshuva with a number of pages I Xerox to give you some insight, you're welcome to it. It's very fascinating. What's his name?
You should call him.
Yashikar Fruchim to you. Just let me give out a few freebies. Yitzchak.
You know, I mentioned Mordechai Tversky. He's the guy.
Yeah, I know who he is. I didn't want to get into it in class because the tape will pick it up, but I know who it is.
Okay.
He's going to, if the law. Okay, this is a printout of a talk the Dr. Grach gave, I believe, here. It's not so clear, but you can understand it. He has a theory there, which has been criticized. Yitzchak, this is to you, for someone hearing you on tape. No. This is Danny Sperber, if anyone wants. And this is the announcement on Reb Moshe Weinberger as the new Mashgiach of YU. It's on a Pro Chabad website. It's interesting to see the comments of the Chachamim who are blogging in. Some of them have to go back to school and be re-educated what life is about. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Okay.